Christopher Titus is a longtime stand-up comedian, actor, and writer who is bringing those stand-up skills to Austin this weekend at Cap City Comedy Club. It is the Carrying Monsters Tour. You can check it out Thursday, February 29th through Saturday, March 2nd. Tickets and more info at capcitycomedy.com.
What's up, man?
Not a lot. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Let me clear some of this shit up. Go full screen. Are you just going to horror my show?
We're going to talk about, your stand-up life, which I wasn't completely familiar with, if I'm being honest. I didn't realize how far back it stretched or where it started. We may talk about that Prince mugshot in the background and Prince. I don't know. We're going to figure it out. You do the Armageddon update. I have a bit on my radio show called Where Are We At in the Society, where it's just pointing out the most fucked up things in life and the direction we're all headed as humanity. So we're going to have some fun with it if you're cool with that.
Yeah, man, it started as a joke. It started because everybody, like, when they were talking about Obama wearing a tan suit. And I remember, as a joke, I named it the Armageddon update. And then it started to really start to lean towards Armageddon in the last 7 years. So I'm like, okay, well, I guess it became real, which is not good.
You know, considering everything that's happened in the last 7 years, like, what is the thing that concerns you the most about humanity? Even though we are promoting the Cap City shows, because you are a very funny dude, too.
The arrogantly dumb, the people that are dumb and they're proud of it. And they're like, yeah, I don't care what the facts are. I know what I think. Well, so there's so much irony in the sentence. I think that's the scariest thing. Education is national security. And I think that no one seems to care about it anymore. Yeah, that's not what my favorite one is. You give someone, lay out the facts. Here's the charts. Here's what happened. Here's the numbers. Yeah, but that ain't what I believe. What? I know. Yeah, but this is what is, though. This is what is. That ain't the sun. That ain't the sun, man. And that's what it feels. I think that's the word. I think that's where we're at right now. So I think as comedians, man, our job is to keep pointing that out. And some of us seem to have just jumped on board and joined those people, which is weird.
It's weird, but it's also not totally surprising. It's as simple as sometimes is like somebody is at a stoplight, the first car at a stoplight, and they're very clearly staring at their phone. Yep. And the light turns green and you give just a little honk, just that little honk like, hey, it's time to go. You're kind of screwing everybody else behind you by being distracted by your cell phone. Right. And instead of just giving that courtesy wave, they decide to give you the finger in return. And it's like, I'm trying to help this whole process along here. Yet you're doubling down on your stupidity by giving me the finger in the back.
You're doing your part as the village. Yeah. Like, dude, look, I know you're on Tinder at the stoplight. And by the way, let's be very clear. When you're on the first car at a red light, that's a sacred responsibility, man. You leave like it's the Winter Nationals. You, when that light goes green, whoop, you drop the hammer. You don't get to wait. So I'm always in LA, it's worse too. It's any big city. What are people doing? Are they trying to finish books at the red light? What exactly? Like, I put my phone down and I'm literally watching Tony Schumacher is a good friend of mine, the world champion, Top Fuel guy. And I'm ready. I'm going. I'm not going to make people mad. We should be able to just all have cop push bumpers on the front of our cars. And if you 1, 2, 3, 4, you should just be able to push them out of the intersection. That's just me. That's if I was run in charge of stuff.
You and I are cut from the same cloth as far as
good
concern, because you're right. It's like next to jury duty in terms of that civic duty of being at the front of a stoplight. And the most infuriating element to me, Christopher, is people who are turning left and you get that left turn signal or that left arrow, excuse me. We need to be in formation like the Blue Angels, as
exactly. We're that,
especially if it's high traffic times. I want to see maybe a quarter to half a car length in front of you, all making that tight turn. We know what our route is, and you're going to help every car make it through that left turn arrow. But sadly, too many people put 3 and 4 car lengths between the car in front of them.
Or how about the guy? This is, I hate we're talking about traffic, but the guy. Okay, so the guy's making a left. Quarter mile away, there's a car. And I don't know how many times I've screamed in my car because you could have a 747 could have made the left and you couldn't make the left. So I think we are a little good. I'm glad we've now settled that we're friends forever now, I think.
That's right. Friends forever, based on our traffic proclivities.
We should not drive together, though, because I'll just be like, you're going to get out and punch him, or I get out and punch him. One of us.
I've had friends like that in the past where it's like, we cannot, we inspire one another's road rage, because it starts to turn into a joke after a while. So it's somewhat disarming, but then it can get inflammatory pretty quickly after that, too, though. So as far as you performing in Austin at Cap City this weekend, I would ask if you performed in Austin, but I know you have, because I've seen you at Cap City Comedy Club in the past. Austin finds itself as a stand-up mecca all of a sudden. For somebody who has spent time here as a stand-up comedian, does that surprise you at all?
No, you know, Austin has always been this amazing bastion of intelligence in Texas. That is one of those places that's, thoughtful, and the people are good. I mean, they're smart. And it's Austin's one of those places that you want to go to as a comic. There's some places I look at my calendar, I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to get kind of ready for this one. And then Austin, you're like, oh good, I get a break in that new bit. Oh good, I get a work. Oh, they're going to love this bit. And the new show, Karen Monsters, we're filming it in April 13th. So it's the best it's ever been. And I over the years, I just keep condensing them till there's more jokes. It's the best it's ever been. It's a monster. It is a monster, the show.
What do you love about this specialist compared to all the others? Because you're in double digits at this point with your stand-up specials.
Yeah, man, this is my 10th special. This one as the darkest. One of the jokes in the show is, tonight you're going to see stories that for many years I couldn't tell. And then a bunch of people who the stories are about died. And now there's stories I should not tell, but I'm not going to court. So I'm letting go some of the, like, there's a bit about my grandma Titus, who wasn't the best grandma. My grandma Titus was a grandma without hugs, and the bitch didn't bake cookies either. So she was, and it's funny, because like when you'd hug grandma Titus, you'd hug her and she'd go, almost like, it burns. She never said that, but it was implied. And so I wrote this bit about Grandma Titus, and I, over the years, I've never asked anybody, all the stories I've told about my family, I've never once asked if I can tell them, and which has made Thanksgiving very weird for many years. Like when I show up to Thanksgiving, nobody's like, hey, did you guys have a good year? Yeah, it was great. Go have some pie. Like, people are very, don't want to talk to me. So I, for the first time, I asked for permission. I called my Aunt Kathy, my grandmother's daughter, who's the most amazing human being. She's the opposite of Grandma Titus. And I asked her if I could do this bit. And the bit's pretty dark about who Grandma Titus was. And she goes, well, do the bit for me on the phone. So I do the bit for it. And there's this really long pause. And Kathy just goes, yeah, that sounds about right. It's her mom, dude. And then there's a bit about my sister's suicide. My wife, who's also a comedian, she said, what are the one or two stories you've never been able to tell? And I said, I couldn't talk about Kirsten's suicide. And she goes, well, then you have to talk about it. So that was a hard bit to write, but it ended up being, I do it differently. I don't make it sappy. This show's the best I've ever done. Like, sometimes you know, I think musicians, everybody comes out with an album that they go, wow, I actually stretched on that one. Like, I got my, you know, I got my kick above my head on that one. And so that's kind of what this one is.
I always find myself drawn to comedians who can go back and forth between serious and funny within the context of a comedy special. I think that makes the funny, it hits a little bit harder when you're able to do that effectively. And you've been able to do that effectively throughout your career. I mean, though you say this is your darkest special, your comedy always has a bit of a one-man show element to it, too. How do you pull off the funny as well as you do, considering that you do touch on some extremely dark subjects, not just with this special, but going past the previous nine?
I think it's so funny, man, because there's great comics out there that do that style. Berbiglia does it. I mean, there's some guys that I really enjoy. And I saw Lily Tomlin do Signs of Intelligent Life years ago. I saw her on stage, and I was like, my manager said, she was working on it. She was on paper. I was like 19 or 20. And I thought I was a comic at that point. I'd been doing comedy maybe a year and a half, 2 years. And I remember watching it, and I was just like, I need to quit comedy right now. I need to stop. I need to be a welder. I need to go to trade school, because I suck. And so after that, and then you watch Pryor do the old stuff. So I grew up on these guys that like would take it further. And I think the problem with comedy right now is there's a bunch of people that are imitating what they see on TikTok and Instagram. And there's no, there's right now, I mean, there's no Bill Hicks. I can't find a Bill Hicks. You know, I mean, who's a new Bill Hicks? Someone where you're like, holy crap, that dude's pushing it. Like, I love Kyle Kinane, but I mean, who's the new crop that's really trying to really push it? There's just a lot of, you know, I don't know. I guess I grew up in an era where it was Hicks and it was Carlin and it was, you know, and Pryor was still working. And I just, your job is supposed to take humanity and just squeeze the juice out of it, man.
Well, you're speaking my language, talking obviously some of the greats, including Bill Hicks, who is a Houston and Austin guy.
Oh,
and
God, man.
In learning a little bit about your comedy past, you started in San Francisco, but you moved in the late 80s to L.A. Did you ever cross paths with Hicks? Because he was a comedy store regular around that time.
Well, weirdly enough, in California, the girl ended up being the worst ex-wife ever. I was dating her at the time, and he showed up it was this breakfast place that had a bar that they opened at night. And it was a one nighter in a room that held maybe 60 people. And I watched him do something amazing. He got on stage, he's doing it, he's killing. And then you saw him, when you're a comic, you see what people are doing. You can see through what that surface level of the bit is. I saw him kind of get mad that the audience was enjoying him. he started to like hate them, and then he just made them hate him, and then he stopped, and then he went back and made them love him again. And it was like, it was like a dude, I don't know, man, it was like an Evel Knievel movement of comedy where he was jumping the fountains and then he fell and then he got back on and jumped them again. Like, it was amazing what he did. And but he was a dark dude, man. He was a dark dude until the end. And he it's so funny because people get Hicks wrong. When you look through his comedy, he's always on the right side. And I think when comics are bitching about woke, man, everybody's woke. Nah. You're just not on the right side of the issue. You're not on the human side of the issue. Our job, if you look at Carlin was brutal. But Carlin, if you would call Carlin woke, right? The stuff he talked about, going after religion, going after, you know, he was going after like the government. He didn't agree with it. And so many comics today. Listen, man, no one's been canceled. I hate when comics go, yeah, man, you're going to get canceled. Who's been canceled? Nobody's been canceled. We've got guys that were literally found out to be like possible pedophiles, and they're still working. We're good. We're fine.
I would say, if anything, that comedy is almost immune to the whole idea of cancel culture and wokeness and things like that. And perhaps it is because some do rail so hard against it. And we did reach a weird place 3, 4, 5 years ago. And obviously it was exacerbated by COVID as well, where there were some weird paths that people were taking with regards to an attempt to cancel somebody else for words that sometimes were taken out of context, sometimes taken very much in context, and to see hell reign supreme on those people in the process. But comedy, in a sense, comedy has benefited from the backlash to that. I think it's why we're seeing a sort of stand-up bubble created right now. I'm just wondering what ultimately pops that, because this is an art form that a lot of people have taken to in the last couple of years, not only as people trying to make it as comedians, but just comedy club crowds. But then again, maybe I have a skewed opinion of it all because I am in Austin, a place that now has like 3 or 4 really good places to see shows, including Cap City and the Domain. I mean, it is one of the most beautiful comedy clubs in the country, and they regularly get great crowds there too.
It is, man. You know, our job is, listen, man, I'm not talking about people complaining. I'm talking about comedians that complain about being canceled. Nobody's been canceled. Look, the people on the far left that are like mad at people for words. Like, I remember watching Chappelle doing the special where he had that trans comic that he helped out. And then I remember watching it going, oh, people that follow Chappelle may be anti-trans, and Chappelle's talking about it in such a way that he's giving people access to it, making it, I thought it was such a good special. And all these crazies, look, man, there's crazy on both sides, but the far left was like, oh, he's horrible. Did you watch it? No, he wasn't. He was saying the guy was like funny, and he said he did the shit. Like, did you watch it? Yeah, those people are nuts. I'm just talking about when comedians complain about it. Comedians don't get a complaint. Look, if I go up on stage and I suck, that's on me. Period. That's on me, man.
Yeah, no, the two comedians that I think about that I guess were canceled in the moment were Shane Gillis, who just hosted Saturday Night Live. So clearly that didn't stick. And then Tony Hinchcliffe, who's here in Austin now, and I'd argue is one of the funniest guys in Austin. For a short amount of time, he could not find work, but he was propped up by the community. And now he has one of the most popular comedy podcasts in the world. They're selling out arenas. So clearly that one didn't stick either.
Good, man. Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying, though. Eventually, if you just stay funny, you just stay funny. Just stay funny. It's and also, I think people really don't. It's weird to watch a comedian complain about cancel culture. Dude, you write a bit about it. If you're going to write a bit about it, improve it. But our job is to kind of drop a premise and then prove it. And, you know, and the next show is called Death Wish. I found out that my family's been here since 1638.
Oh, wow.
The Titus's have been here. And then I found out my mom's side of the family's been here since 1658. So the next show is going to be about the history of America, because we did nothing. Titus's didn't know. We don't own a bank. We don't have a city name. We have Titusville. And I think that's because, and then I found out the first guy that was here got kicked out of the Massachusetts settlement because there was the Quakers. I guess the Quakers and the Puritans had beef. They were like the Crips and the Bloods of the 1600s. And so they were kicking the Quakers out. And my relatives like, no, you can live with us. And then the pastor kicked them out of town. And I'm like, that sounds like me. Totally sounds like Titus. Totally sounds like, you guys live with us. Well, screw you guys. We're leaving then. That just totally sounds like me. So we have a long genetic history of accomplishing nothing in the Tituses. So that's what the next show is going to be about.
Where does Titus come from? Is that German heritage, considering the
England? They came over from England, man, which is England, great. Okay. Yeah, because you think I'd be a lot softer, but I'm not. I'm not. All right. Don't tell me I'm from England. But
are you typically working two specials ahead? Because that's impressive that you haven't even put the one that you're currently on tour with on tape just yet. And you're already deep in thought on that next one now.
Yeah, man. So remember I did a show called Big Shots a while ago, and it was my second TV show, and the writer's strike canceled it. And I remember finishing it, and I remember thinking, at any moment, there's a bunch of people that are attorneys or executives that can just decide to end my career. But stand up, let's say I just keep writing good stand up. Whether I'm playing the amazing, like an A club like Cap City, or I'm playing a bar on the corner, I can still make enough money to eat and pay my rent, and I'm in charge of that. And I think any good comic needs to stay a comic. So that's what I'm doing. So yes, I'm already working on the next one. Yes.
Now, every comic talks about, not every comic, but I've heard a lot of comics talk about early on as you're grinding, you're trying to find your voice and trying to figure out how to be funny consistently, that it's a discouraging process. It takes a lot of grit, a lot of metal to stick with that early on. And oftentimes comedians get some really kind words or praise or some motivation from a fellow comedian who has made it more in a sense. Do you have an example like that from your stand-up life, or somebody who was more established than you really gave you a pat on the back and said, hey, you're doing some really good stuff out there. Keep up with it.
Yeah, I have a couple stories. My son on his own has just started to do stand up. He's 19. Wow. And I am not complimentary. I'm not saying I'm bad, but I'm telling him where he's making it. So years ago when I started, I asked Dana Carvey. This was before Dana had got Saturday Night Live. He'd already done a TV show in LA. And I said, can you tell me? I got off stage. I was opening for him. I was like 19 or 20 and 21 maybe. And I said, would you watch my act? And Dana's very, very, he's one of my favorites. He's in the pantheon of Robin and Carlin. And he goes, do you want me to tell you you're funny, or do you want me to tell you the truth? And I was like, well, I was raised by Ken Titus, dude. You can tell me anything. I'm fine. There's no way you can insult me worse than my dad. So I get off stage that day and he goes, all right, you want to hear the truth? And I go, he goes, you're funny. And I go, good. He goes, and you write well. He goes, but you are not talking to the audience. And I said, yes, I am. He goes, no, you're not. You're talking to the back wall. He goes, you're afraid to stare at the audience. You're afraid to look at him. He told me probably one of the, like whenever a comic's on stage, and if your comics are listening, whenever you're on stage and you get, sometimes you feel disconnected, you can't connect to the audience. Dana said this to me. He goes, I want you to do the setup to one person and then the punchline to the room, and then pick another person, setup, and then punchline to the room. And he said, by the end of your show, you should have delivered a setup to everybody in that thing one-on-one. He goes, the person you're talking to, you've sucked them into your show, and the three people around them think you're looking at them. He goes, and it creates this weird, no matter how big the room is, it creates this weird intimacy. And there was other guys that I like the guys like Slayton and stuff. They would just take me aside and instantly I was already getting laughs. They would just tell me what was wrong. Here's how bad you suck. Here's where you suck. And I like those guys. I never wanted praise was never something that, that I don't think praise helps a comedian. You have to build that callus. And my son's building it. He's going to open mics in LA. And he's like, he just calls me, man, I bombed tonight. And I'm like, all right, show me the video. And then he watches the video. He's like, oh, I didn't bomb as bad as I thought. That's right. That was a 6 on the bomb scale instead of a 10. Good. So he's learning. He's learning. And so I don't know why he's doing it, honestly.
Is he actively seeking out your advice then? Is he sending you tape and saying, hey, wow, how can I get better here? Or and how hard is it for you if he's not doing that to not offer up that unsolicited advice? Because I'm the father of a 9 and 7 year old right now. That's one of my biggest challenges is letting them fail versus saying, hey, you need to do it this way. They've got to figure it out on their own for it to truly stick.
You have to, and you can't prop him up. You know, his mother propped him up in soccer, and then he ended up hating soccer. She was a coach on the team, and my ex-wife, and she just and so here's what I do. I'm dead honest with him, and to his credit, he got off stage. The mistake was his first show. He killed his first show for him for a brand new comedian. He did great, and I'd helped him like structure it, and then I said, I'm not helping you anymore. I'm not helping you anymore. You have to. I can write your jokes, but that's not you. So he started going, like, he's going to these like nooners. He's doing stuff that I'm like, you're nuts. You're doing stuff I wouldn't do. And he said, but I got to get better. And he thanked me for being hard on him, so that's my dad. I said, dude, man, if you keep doing that, you're not going to be a comedian. And, you know, and to his credit, he took it. He took it. And he's like, he called me and he said, thanks, Dad, for telling me the truth. So I ripped a hole in his soul, but he seems okay with it. That's a Titus.
Titus Wade, do you have any other kids, Christopher?
I do. Another one. My other one picked music. So both of my children will be living with me in the next few years.
Okay. So your kids have exited childhood now. Having said that, though, you still take a critical look at this world. What do you think the most difficult thing is about parenting in 2024?
Well, when they're adults, they don't listen to you at all. Even no matter, I've got 40 years of wisdom in show business. And my daughter's like, I got it, Dad. Shut up. And my son's listening. The hardest thing about parenting, I don't know, you got 9 and 7. What do you think?
I think that technology is a challenge. I think that the unsolicited advice thing is a challenge. I think that the food options that kids are given is a big challenge as well. It's, you know, when you're surrounded by junk in every possible physical form, you as a parent who knows what's right and knows what they need to be doing and consuming and not staring at for hours on end, it becomes much more difficult when all their friends are doing so. So I think that there are all these things, and this isn't just unique to this time, mind you, it's been throughout human history, but I think it's just trying to fight some of those things and being seen as the asshole parent at times and trying to do what's right. Just hope when it's all said and done that they have an appreciation for that, that when they're able to be present, you know, years from now, as teenagers, as young adults, as fully formed adults, that they can think back and say, gosh, my dad didn't just let me play video games for 4 hours at a time. We actually didn't have phones at the dinner table. We had to have conversations and we weren't allowed to stare at a screen when we were in the car. We were forced to look at the world around us. And now it's actually benefiting us, you know?
Why does it feel like you're kind of setting up for an alibi for a child protective services case?
Well, so I told them
they could. Here's what I think. I think that we didn't have a problem of going, oh my God, I've lost 4 friends. I lost 4 friends. Like they're imaginary people. You know, Jesus had friends. They followed him. They were with him all the time. You got people that liked something. I think we are in a place now where you have to let them fail. And sometimes, like my daughter's in the middle of something right now, man, she's 22 and she's dating a 42-year-old dude. And I've done some research and he's not, in my opinion, not a good dude. And I took her to dinner and I told her that. And then she's like, I'm out. And so I'm like, when you've been through relationships, you've been through nightmares. I just went, okay, God bless. Hope that works out. I'll be here when you're done though. You know, my dad was the opposite. My dad just cut me out. Don't show up till you're, you know, I'll see you in 5 years. I'm like, I'm here when you need me. But up until then, it's gonna hurt. It's like watching someone on train tracks and you're going, there's a train behind you, and they're like, I don't hear it. Okay, God bless. Hope it works out. So I think you're smart to let him do it. Let him mess up, because no one has learned anything by being told. No, you know, you have to burn yourself. You got to put the penny in the light socket, as my dad said. My dad told me one time. He said, "Hey, I'm not your friend. I'm your father. I care more about you than any friend ever will." And then he let me ride my bike with no helmet. So. Over a piece of plywood and a couple of 2x4s to jump it. So yeah, I was driving when I was 9. My dad was like, "Dude, it's a stick shift. Go drive it." Yep, I was driving at 9, drifting. I was drifting dune buggies, full size cars at 9 years old.
Oh my gosh! So you were actually in the driver's seat with your mom or dad not sitting directly behind you to correct if things went sideways. Then
even worse. We went to there was this field we used to go to, and he had bought this Myers Max dune buggy that he built over the weekend with a buddy of his. He cut up my third stepmom's car, took her Volkswagen body off the frame, and on Monday she had a dune buggy. That's my dad. So, and it's funny because I have projects. I've got 3 hot rod projects going on right now. Because of him, I build stuff on my own. So, oh no, this is the same guy that bought a ski boat from an insurance company that had been cut up into 3 pieces. He fiberglassed it back together, then put motor and upholstery in it, put his family in it, and we went out in the ocean. So, yeah.
And we're not. Work?
It worked. It worked. It stayed together forever. But that it was in pieces, and he fiberglassed it all back together, and it was a cool boat. But I never, as I got older, I was like, that thing wasn't really structurally sound anymore. And and we learned. So that's my dad. And so the dune buggy, so he would go to this field, he'd pick me up after work from school, whatever. He'd have a beer. He'd get out of the dune buggy. We're in this muddy field with these guys riding motorcycles, and I'm 9. He'd go, "Just go drive it." He said the time he stopped letting me do it on my own because there was a bunch of berms, and he looked up, he's drinking beer with a buddy, just watching me drive around this muddy field. And the dune buggy was about 8 feet in the air and came down like this, just basically straight down, and landed on his wheels. And he said after that, he kind of pulled me back a little bit. So I was raised with, I was just thrown into stuff all the time, man. You know, I mean, my dad had 6 ex-wives, you know, as I said before, he's got a marriage license gold card. So I was just used to things changing all the time, man. You know, one of my favorite bits that I did was like my dad, he'd have these women over, and I'd be up in the morning eating breakfast, and they'd get up and sit across the table from me and be like, "Hi, I just want, you know, me and your dad." I'd be like, hey, there's no you and my dad. Like, here's your car keys. Here's your complimentary t-shirt. Have a good day. Thank you. I was like my dad's, I was like a vagina concierge for my father at times.
Oh man, what a great bit there. All right, last thing now, Christopher, because smart people tend to ask themselves a lot of questions, and typically there's that one overriding question. For you, as somebody who is as bright as you are, is there one question that you find yourself asking more than the others right now?
Oh, man, that's an interesting question. I think anybody who's creative always wonders, am I still good? And I think that's the beginning of this next show. This is the one. Carrie Monster is the best thing I've ever done. It balls out funny. It goes to dark places that still is funny. And then this next one I'm calling Death Wish, because America seems to have a death wish. Every 50 years, we seem to try to end this country. And the Tituses were part of that. That's going to be the whole thread to the thing. And I'm like, it's such a big idea that I don't know if I'm going to be able to pull it off. I think anybody creative goes, man, hey, do I suck now? I think that's what everybody who's smart and creative does. And if you're not doing that, you're not getting better.
You just heard the man, people. Carrying Monsters is the best thing that he's ever done, and he's bringing it to Cap City Comedy Club this weekend.
Oh, great club.
Shows Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night. That's February 29th through March 2nd. You can go to capcitycomedy.com for info and to snag those tickets that remain. Christopher, this has been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for the time today, man. People need to go to your website, christophertitus.com. Check out that podcast, Armageddon Update, as well.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's great talking to you, man. Always good having an intelligent conversation. I could have walked with material if you want, but I love this better. Thanks, man.
Thanks to Gentleman Jesus, the intro and outro music. Hear more of his work at gentlemanjesus.com. Thanks to you for hanging out. For more of the show and to connect on social media, visit booksonpod.com. Talk to you next time on Books on Pod.